Perhaps you have come here with deep spiritual yearnings. Perhaps you just long for a little rest, a respite from the stress and strain of everyday life. Maybe you long for comfort or inspiration. Maybe you yearn for camaraderie in navigating the ups and downs of human living. Or perhaps you yearn to heal what is broken in our larger world. Whatever your longings, we invite you to bring them here. Settle into this peaceful place of restoration. Take a deep breath in. Relax your shoulders and breathe out. You and your yearnings are in good company here. During this hour of worship, may we hold one another and our respective yearnings with gentle awareness and compassionate care. Blessed be. Have you ever seen cartoons in which a character has on one shoulder a little angel and on the other shoulder a little devil? When the character is faced with a decision, the devil encourages the character to make the poor choice, like not share toys or eat too much junk food. You'll notice this one has a chocolate bar there. And the angel encourages the character to make kind or healthy choices, like share with others or eat healthy food, like broccoli. As Unitarian Universalists, we often talk about it a different way. We say that everyone has within them a still, small voice, and that if you listen very carefully to your own voice, you will make kind and healthy choices. It's kind of funny to call it an inner voice because it does not necessarily use words. Often it's more of a feeling. It's like love. You can't see it, but you know it when you feel it. Some people call it an inner light. Close your eyes and try to picture your own inner light. You might feel it in your head or inside your chest near your heart or in the center of yourself like a long, strong rod. Maybe you feel your inner light wrapped all around you, holding you like a cozy hug. You can open your eyes. Different people envision it in different ways. Maybe you have heard your own still small voice within, or felt your own inner light. It's the part of you that wants you to do things that are loving and kind. Like comforting a friend who's sad, standing up for a classmate who's being bullied, making a card for someone in your family to tell them that you love them. Raise your hand if you've ever done something like that. Something kind. Yeah. You've got an inner light. Sometimes heeding our inner voice is easy. It's just what we naturally want to do. Sometimes we have to listen harder to hear it. Let's say you have a cookie and a friend. Maybe part of you wants the whole cookie to yourself, but another, deeper part of you loves your friend and wants to make him or her happy. When you are tuned into that deeper part of you, when you listen to your inner voice, you might realize that your friend is much more important to you than a cookie. And you might make the choice to share that cookie with your friend. Listening to your inner voice takes practice. I hear the peak age is about 7, so if you're not yet 7, give yourself time. You'll hear it better. Church is a good place to practice. Church is about giving us time and space to tune into our inner voice, giving us the love and nurture and support that we need to be our naturally loving selves. We Unitarian Universalists believe that each person has the potential to be loving and kind, and that furthermore, deep down inside, most people yearn to be, really want to be, loving and kind. Sometimes when I look at each one of you, I can see the glow of your inner light. You each have your own special way of loving and caring. I want to thank you for bringing those gifts here to our congregation. And thank you for listening. As many of you heard last Sunday, we lost two members of our congregation over the holidays. I'd like to light a candle of remembrance for each of them. First, for Belle Paul, member of both Unitarian congregations in Victoria, a remarkable woman who dedicated her life, both professional and post-professional, to innovative community organizing and social activism. Belle passed away peacefully on the morning of December 24th at the age of 94. The next candle of remembrance is for Sandra Jordan. She died so suddenly on vacation in Hawaii. Many in our congregation and beyond were touched by the light of her friendship and care. She was warm and caring and sociable, working tirelessly for those in need through projects like cooking for the Sandy Merriman Women's Shelter and raising funds for the orphans cared for by Child Haven. Sandra's death came as a shock to all of us. Even as we manage our own shock and sadness, our hearts go out to Sandra's husband, Jim. How horrid and surreal and awful it must all be for him. When he returns to Victoria this week, we will do what we can to offer him our care and support. This is what spiritual community is for. This is what we do when bad things happen. We band together. No one need grieve alone. For Sandra Jordan. Broadening the embrace of our circle of concern, I would also like to light a candle for people affected by the events in Paris this past week. The people who were murdered at the newspaper, on the street, at the kosher grocery store, the hostages who survived, the assailants whose messed up lives somehow led them to believe that such slaughter is justified. How does that happen? Muslims everywhere who bemoan the ways in which their faith has been twisted to serve violence and who now fear backlash. And people everywhere who long for a world free of fear, free of hatred, free of brutality. In solidarity with the rally for unity, we light this candle. When horrible things happen, there is a longing that wells up in me. Something in me reaches out to something unnamed, unnameable for comfort, love, relief, peace. I want to summon for those who suffer something that will bring them comfort, love, relief, peace. It is this longing that I hear in the African American spiritual Kumbaya. It is a slave song, a song of longing, born of suffering. The song uses the word Lord. If Lord doesn't work for you, take it as a metaphor for love or spirit of life, or hear it simply as an expression of lament. Oh, Lord. However you think of it, on behalf of yourselves and those who are grieving this week, I invite you to give full voice to the longing. Let us remain seated and sing it together with loving intention, verses 1, 4, and 5. After the song, we'll share in a moment of silence.
When I was young, most of my friends came from large families with 5 or 6 children. I had 2 siblings, but they were 8 and 10 years older than me. I often felt as though I was an only child with 4 adults telling me what to do. I loved playing at the house of my best friend and her 5 younger siblings. I yearned to be part of a big family, and remember thinking that I'd love to have 6 children when I grew up. As with many childhood dreams, things often turn out differently. I married young, the relationship was short-lived, and there were no children. I focused on my work and my friends. The yearning for children remained strong, but I didn't wish to have a child until I had the support of a loving partner in a long-lasting relationship. It wasn't until 1992 that the time was right and my daughter Emma was born. Complications with both her health and mine meant that having a larger family wasn't going to be a possibility, although the longing was still there. However, over the years, I've learned that having unfulfilled longings does not prevent happiness. Emma is now the age to begin pursuing her own yearnings, and I feel so lucky to have her in my life. And I have many great nieces and nephews, the grandchildren of my older siblings, that provide the large extended family that I yearned for.
In our monthly newsletter, we present you with an array of theme questions. The idea is for you to look them over and notice which one hooks you, which one intrigues you the most. Then let that question lead you into deeper exploration of the theme. This month, the question that grabbed me was about childhood yearnings. I'd love to ask each one of you that question. What did you consistently long for as a child? When I pondered the question myself, it made me think of the games we used to play that had to do with predicting our futures. There was one we called MASH, Mansion, Apartment, Shack, House, that would predict, by chance of numbers, what kind of home we would end up with, as well as what kind of spouse, number of children, car, and so on. These games inspired conversations about what we hoped to end up with. My stepsister, who was 2 years older than me, versed me on the best kinds of cars. She craved the fancy cars. Porsche, BMW, Mercedes. When I pondered the options, I decided that the vehicle I most desired was a mobile home. My stepfather's sister had one in her family that I had seen. I guess you would call it an RV. It had compact amenities like sink and toilet and a little nook with a table and booth-like benches where you could play cards. Best of all, in the space above the driver's head, a bed. It was like the top bunk of a bunk bed, which everyone knows is the best. And the thought that you could be nestled in such a cozy space while moving along the highways and byways of the land was magic to me. In retrospect, my choice of a mobile home as a favorite vehicle makes complete sense psychologically. My parents divorced when I was 2, I was presented with a rapidly changing shifting cast of family members, new step-parents, new step-siblings on both sides, then a half-sibling, and all the extended family to which each member was attached. Moreover, before I was 6 years old, I had moved from California to Boston, to California, to New Hampshire, to Colorado, and back to California to two different homes before we finally settled down when I began grade one. Some children take a background like that and develop a keen sense of adventure and a love of travel. Right, not me. I yearned for stability, hence the mobile home. The thought of a home I could take with me, whichever direction the winds of change blew, felt comforting and safe, like a protective cocoon. When I look at that childhood yearning now, I see how it shaped what followed. One of the questions in the newsletter comes from Joan Chister. A soul that longs for something is a soul that is growing one way or another, smaller or larger. What have your longings done to your life and its horizons? Broadened them or crippled them? On the one hand, my yearning for a sense of home that I could carry with me led me to invest in relationships. All my life, I have sought, built, and nurtured friendships. I am still in touch with childhood friends, university friends, grad school friends, parenting friends. When I chose a spouse, I looked for one that also prized friendships, loyalty, and family stability. I was fortunate to find Shauna, and we were fortunate to be able to eventually have our two children, though our yearnings for each child spent a long time in the heartbreaking realm of uncertainty before our daughter and then our son arrived. So in some ways, my yearning for a sense of home broadened my horizons. It led me to create a robust circle of friends and a family of my own. On the other hand, my yearning for stability also crippled my horizons. I had to wrestle with fear of change, a perpetual low-level anxiety which often caused me to shy away from taking risks that might have led to growth. And here, I consider another question. Sometimes yearnings are fulfilled and thus lead to greater depth and meaning in your life. But what happens when your yearnings are left unfulfilled? Then what? Sometimes we try to fill the yearning with false fillers, things like mindless TV, junk food, alcohol. These things may bring immediate satisfaction, but ultimately, and especially when overdone, they can leave us feeling empty, unsatisfied. The yearning remains. Again, I ask, what can we do with unfulfilled yearning? My yearning for stability was, in some ways, an impossible wish. Change is inevitable. For me, the unfulfilled yearning eventually morphed into a spiritual challenge. Given that I can't have what I want, unchanging stability, how do I live with what is? How do I live with change? Returning to the mobile home metaphor, how do I develop a sense of home that can move around with me, a sense of stability and groundedness that I carry within as I navigate the ups and downs of the road of change? For a while, I took on as my spiritual practice striving to live with arms wide open. I would literally practice this position, grounding myself in that loving part of me, that inner voice, that inner light, opening my arms in welcome and compassion to whoever and whatever life brought my way. Sometimes it helped to envision a spirit of love and life flowing through me into the top of my head, filling my center and flowing out through my heart and hands. It was a lovely practice, but the posture was hard to maintain. I would often feel an impulse to crumple, close, protect. As they say in the fitness world, I needed to strengthen my core. And so I turned to the practices of attention and gratitude, taking the time in any given moment to just notice what's around me, paying attention to the details of what is, and noticing if there is anything around me I appreciate. A color, a comfortable sweater or chair, the temperature of the air. The more I practice gratitude intentionally, the more I spontaneously notice things for which I am grateful as I go about my daily life. A song, a food, a smile on the face of someone I love. The practices of attention and gratitude pull me into the present moment. They pull me away from worries about the future. As my fear of change is future-based, it gets less airtime in my head. Furthermore, I have developed over time a certain confidence that whatever changes come my way, I will deal with them. I mentioned to you once that this shift happened for me most deeply when Shauna was pregnant with our son. As the pregnancy progressed, the little fetus had gone through so many possible diagnoses, deaths, and dangers that at a certain point, I was forced to give up making contingency plans for each possible outcome. It was almost a physical sensation, this letting go of control, a resignation that what will be, and a grounded sense that whatever will be, we will deal with it, even if it's devastating. I spent a lot more time in the present, appreciating what happened to be good in each ordinary day. Like a stream impeded by a rock fall, when my yearning for stability was blocked in one direction, my yearning found and flowed into different channels. Over time and through various spiritual practices, I developed a sense of stability within my own mobile home. That is my story of yearning, based on just one of the questions. What, I wonder, is yours? If you were to consider your childhood yearnings and how they shaped your life's journey, what would your story be? Have your yearnings broadened or crippled the horizons of your life? Did any of your yearnings present you with a spiritual challenge? What have you done with yearnings that went unfulfilled? Have you ever tried to fill yearning with false fillers? Did your blocked yearnings find new channels in which to flow? Some of you will be sharing your stories with one another in the Soul Matters groups that Reverend Shauna and I are leading later this month. But you don't have to be in a Soul Matters group to have these conversations. If you get bored at coffee hour listing what you did over the holidays, you could try instead asking someone, "So, what were the yearnings of your childhood?" Church is a place where we can talk about such things. I dare you to do it.